Well, it's at this time each week I'm joined by Stephen Mayne, or Stephen Mayne and then Andrew Mayne alternately. It's my pleasure to have him in the studio. Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning, Deborah. It's nice to be here.
Thank you very much. Now, we touched on those interest rates with Michael Brissenden. What's your view?
Well, Kevin Rudd last night on the 7:30 report was complaining that the Howard government had left Australia, or his government, with the second highest interest rates in the Western world. And since then, we're going to have two rate rises. So I must say, I'm now firmly in the Bernie Fraser school that this has gone too far, and it's out of hand. And you really just don't need to keep on creating Australia to have one of the highest interest rates in the world for an inflation rate that's running not much over 3%. I mean, our inflation is lower than many other countries. It's lower than the average. Yet we seem to have an inflation-obsessed central bank, which is determined to, and let's be really brutally honest here, is determined to cause a lot more unemployment and cause a 10 to 20% cut in house prices, because that is the ultimate fact as to things that will happen if you keep on jacking up interest rates so aggressively in an economy where the stock market has already fallen by more than 20% and there's a global credit crisis. And Australians are saddled with $1 trillion of household debt and a $600 billion foreign debt. I mean, we are one of the most indebted countries in the world at a citizen corporate level, and we're having this ferocious interest rate attack imposed on us all when the stock market's already been crunched and companies are falling over left, right and centre. So I think it's way over the top, and it's got to stop.
Well, you know, how good is the Reserve Bank board at getting the nuanced picture? Do they, if they've set themselves this inflation target range, you know, the idea that they can actually balance up those competing things, unemployment and house prices crashing down, if they do think that house prices have gone too high and that that's unsafe because of the level of debt that people carry, then how hard is it for them sitting around the board to weigh all of that up?
Well, I mean, they've got an inflation target, and look, they've got to look at all the factors, and I think they would be pleased with some of the things they're seeing coming out of the Rudd government, such as an increased focus on public savings, such as investment in skills and infrastructure to try and ensure that there isn't too much inflation coming through on things like accessing infrastructure and the cost of wages. But I think that the great irony here is that a lot of the inflation problem that we're seeing at the moment are global factors completely out of the control of the government. I mean, there is massive food price inflation at the moment globally. There is a huge shortage of food because we've got India and China with massive increases in demand for protein, and we've got biofuels soaking up huge chunks of arable land. So literally, we are seeing prices like cocoa and wheat and these things absolutely going through the roof. Now, that has nothing to do with Australian interest rates. I mean, and nothing to do with the Rudd government's policies. And it's the same with energy prices and oil. Oil prices are $103 a barrel overnight, and nothing that the Martin Place central bankers do will affect that. There are areas where the government can have an impact, and things like rents is driving into inflation, and the government's announced a package this week to try and increase the supply of housing, which is clearly an issue we have, and they've got immigration things they've got to do to try and get more skilled labour in. And the Labor Party, the big challenge for the Labor Party obviously has to be wages. They have to use their union mates, preach the message about controlling wages and inflation to save interest rate rises. And that is a policy challenge for the Rudd government. And they're obviously going to argue things like this year's tax cuts should mean lower wage rises because you're all getting a tax cut. Those sort of things are vital for the government. But and they seem to be making noises on that front.
Well, it's interesting. And you're hearing, of course, the thoughts of Stephen Mayne, who's the founder of crikey.com.au. He's a shareholder activist. I'm interested in the other side of the interest rate picture, which is people who've actually got a few quid squirreled away. Every time it goes up, they're happier. The danger, if inflation takes off, is that their savings will be devalued, and that has a negative effect on especially self-funded retirees and people like that.
Well, I think that's true, that you don't want inflation. Inflation is bad for working families, completely agree with all that. But if you do things like jack up interest rates to the highest in the world, well, that will directly affect things like the stock market valuations, because people will look at, say, well, I can give my money to the Reserve Bank and after today I can earn 7.25% there. Why would I invest in BHP where I'm only earning 3% or 4% and the stock market falls? And such a huge amount of Australians have their wealth and their savings tied up in the stock market. I mean, people forget that there is now more money in superannuation in Australia, $1.1 trillion, than there is in bank deposits. And we're one of the few countries in the world where that is the case, where Paul Keating's mandated super has leveraged everyday Australians to the stock market, because your typical super fund has 40% of their assets in the Australian stock market. So when you've had things like 20-25% crunch in the stock market, that has a severe wealth effect throughout the economy. And I think things like the stock market crunch will slow the economy in their own right without the Reserve Bank coming over the top with unnecessary...
Let's talk a bit more about that. They've $40 billion lost yesterday.
Well, that's right. I mean, the markets, they're really all over the place. But yeah, another big crunch yesterday, $40 billion lost. The market's off almost 8% in the last four trading days. It's incredibly volatile, and this credit crunch is literally creating daily news flow, and companies that are falling. I mean, Allco yesterday, shares were down another 20%, and you're even for the first time starting to see reports that Australia's banks are going to have to raise new money from their shareholders to fund this huge demand for bank loans, because the phenomenon that's out there at the moment is global credit crunch, which means Australia, which is traditionally addicted to foreign loans, the $600 billion of foreign loans, that tap's been turned off, pretty much. I mean, the system is just frozen. So you're seeing the big banks coming out with their profit reports at the moment showing 20 and 30% increases in the size of their new lending, because everyone is just coming back to the Australian banks and saying, please, sir, give me some money, because Mr. Foreign Banker is no longer giving me money. And this crisis in the credit markets, this confidence crisis, is literally contributing to the substantial reductions in the share market. And if you overlay on top of that, Australian banks actually charging a heck of a lot more for loans to Australian citizens and corporates for housing. I mean, you've got to remember there's $850 billion of housing loans out there. That's a big whack if you suddenly go an extra 25 basis points. So, I think that the market effect, the crunch on the market, particularly yesterday's $40 billion hit, should be the final nail in the argument around the Reserve Bank board meeting this morning, saying we don't need to go over the top with a rate rise. Just look at the $40 billion hit on the market yesterday. That is terrifying everyone out there.
Now, what's the smart money doing?
Well, I have to say I was quite surprised to read Alan Cole of the ABC Doyen has this little newsletter, and he sent one out last night, and he said, that's it, I'm cashing in. I've sold half my shares and I've now got 50% of my super fund in cash. I said to myself, by jingo, even the experts, even the doyens are panicking. I mean, I think that's a panic reaction in this environment to say, nope, I'm out of shares altogether. I'm going 50% cash. I mean, that's sort of World War III sort of battening down the hatches. That is, I was staggered. I bought $3,000 worth of shares yesterday. I think the market fell yesterday. It's actually good buying at the moment. But others are just saying we're so spooked by this credit crunch and companies falling left, right and centre. Well, I'm selling out and going into cash. And that's
well,
very
is
defensive.
There? I mean, I don't know. I'd love to be long in cash myself.
Well, everyone wants to be long in cash. But but if you are investing, if you're a net investor, well, then the question is where do you put your cash? And obviously, people are very worried about property. We're seeing a massive increase in the number of auction listings around the country. Literally, the investment property, and I mean, someone who works for me was just telling me last night they brought forward their property and just put it on the market now because they keep reading about property prices are going to fall. And I think we are literally right at the epicenter of that about to start. You're going to see 10% plus reductions in housing prices and a large increase in the number of transactions.
We had a very interesting talk last Friday with Jonathan Chancellor, who's the property editor from the Sydney Morning Herald, and he observed that for the first time, I think, in history, the number of properties sold in February failed to exceed the number sold in the previous December. So he read that as a trend. Now, he's very cautious about what that might mean, and I'll put to him your observation that this might be a trigger point, that we might start to see falls. But that is really cold comfort to people listening now.
Well, it is cold comfort, but the one saving grace for the Australian property market as opposed to the UK, the US, and particularly Spain, which has suffered the biggest property crunch anywhere, where you're talking at 20 and 30% falls, is the demand-supply equation. The net immigration level's running at 300,000 plus, if you include everyone, work visas, Kiwis, the lot, and the fact that we're 20,000 homes a year short on construction at the moment. So literally, rents are incredibly tight and accommodation's incredibly tight. That's the one thing underpinning the market. But if you're a stressed out investor who's just seen the stock market crash 20% in 3 months and you're struggling to raise a loan or roll over your debts because credit's dried up, the first thing you're doing is selling your investment property. And we're seeing it in the commercial market. The commercial property market, even Macquarie Bank, you know, the doyens of Martin Place, are now down to the tune of more than $100 million on their own investments in their various listed property trusts, particularly in the US. So you are literally seeing many billions of dollars of property, commercial property, being unloaded at the moment by listed property funds that have borrowed too much money and can't refinance their money. And that will spill over to a lesser degree in the domestic housing property market, particularly for those leveraged investors who are going to let go of investment properties to satisfy things like margin loans.
You're listening to Stephen Mayne, who's the founder of crikey.com.au and a shareholder activist. Those margin call loans, how real is the pain of the people who are having those loans called in? Are they so loaded that we don't, it's fine, they'll get over it and move on to the next thing? Or does it really affect them, their families, their standing, everything?
Well, I guess it all depends on your personal situation. I mean, I've been margin loaned over the years, had to sell a few shares. I once borrowed a couple of grand off my mum when I was the business editor of the Daily Telegraph. I was such an incompetent personal financial manager myself. But it all depends on your situation. I mean, the Orco guys, David Coe and these people, I think the margin loan that they suffered when 21 million shares were sold from beneath them, I think that actually destroyed them, because they were the masters of the financial universe. And if these gurus, who all appear on the rich list and live in $50 million and $30 million waterfronts in Vaucluse and Point Piper, if they are suffering the ignominy of having forced margin sales over their flagship company, destroys their world, destroys their credibility. And I think that Orco is gone. And that was when the bell was tolled for Orco. For ordinary investors, well, it all depends on your personal situation. I think it probably has very severely damaged Eddie Graves, the ABC founder, because once again, the idea that the guy who looks after more kids than anyone else in the world can't manage his own finances and has been cleaned out by his financiers is devastating to his reputation. And David Coe, in the interviews, the Orco executive chairman or former executive chairman, in today's press, he's given a number of interviews and he talks about the publicity causing damage, the reputational damage. And I think the same applies to Eddie Groves. It's just that whole media battering for such a big, well-known brand in such a sensitive area that in those two cases, ABC Learning and Orca, I really think that the margin calls on the founders of the companies has been calamitous for them. For ordinary citizens, it's terrible. But at the end of the day, if you're in the share market, you're a whole lot better off than a lot of other people who are simply focusing on paying the rent and paying their mortgage. So anyone who owns any shares in their own right over and above their superannuation fund are by definition in the top 50% of the population, because they at least can play in the share market. So you've got to really, I think, talk about pain. I think you've got to talk about the people who are struggling to pay the rent as being more suffering pain in this environment at the moment, or really battling with a mortgage, as opposed to those who are lucky enough to have a share portfolio and are getting cleaned out because they've got themselves into too much debt and played the market too aggressively.
Mm. Now, there's a mining merger, Zinifex and Oxiana.
Yeah, look, it's quite exciting in all this chaos in the markets to have a $12 billion mining giant created, which is big in historical terms. I mean, you know, in days gone by, we'd have all been jumping up and down about a $12 billion mining merger. But when you're talking about $400 to $500 billion Goliath being created with the BHP Rio deal, it's sort of, oh, okay, that's interesting that you've got a couple of $6 billion miners getting together with a few zinc and lead and silver and gold mines. And I think it's good because one of the great tragedies, I think, during this whole resources boom is that such a small proportion of Australia's great resources projects are actually Australian-owned. I mean, there actually wasn't a mid-level base metals miner on the Australian market before yesterday's merger, because they've all been taken over by foreign companies. I mean, all those great iconic mines at Mount Isa are owned by a Swiss company. The North West Shelf Gas Project, $20 million project, only 10% Australian-owned. The great Kalgoorlie Super Pit Gold Mine, Canadian and American company owns that. So the vast majority of the Hunter Valley coal mines, Anglo-American, the South African company, or Xstrata, the Swiss company. So, yeah, it's sort of quite interesting that such a huge proportion of our resource assets are already foreign-owned. I'd say the overall resources sector is 80% foreign-owned, and almost probably ties back to those comments about political donations earlier, that when such a huge proportion of our economy is owned by massive multinationals, it probably is unhealthy for our democracy if they are making big donations to political parties. So I think the Rudd reform on that front is probably a good thing.
Well, yes, it is interesting to see him buy into that. It's obviously a very hot topic in New South Wales. Do you think that it will have... what will business do about that if it bars access?
Well, a very interesting column in the Fin Review today by Tony Harris, the former New South Wales Auditor General, saying that cash for access is one of the most fundamentally corrupt things in our political process. And I think everyone who just steps back for a moment and looks at it, that you can buy a lunch with the planning minister for $5,000 at an auction, it's actually just disgraceful. I mean, Sydney had cash for comment. We all agree that was a disgrace. Cash for access goes on across the nation. And I think that should be on Kevin Rudd's checklist of things that need to be reformed. And interesting as well that John Faulkner's flagged in the Telegraph today in a Piers Ackerman column that he wants to eliminate the Pauline Hanson factor of making profits out of elections, because federally, and I ran against Peter Costello last time so I know how this works, federally you get $2.10 per vote if you get over 4% of the vote. But in Victoria, for instance, you only get funding from the taxpayer to the extent that you can prove up your expenses. Federally, you can just make a massive profit. So Pauline Hanson has literally made more than $1 million in profit from her various low-cost, high-media tilts that she's run. And Faulkner, the Special Minister of State, is signalling that he wants to eliminate that. Then you've got talk about spending caps, which is what they do in the UK. You can't spend more than 17 million quid on a campaign in the UK. That would be a terrific reform here. And other areas like the lack of balance sheets. I mean, people don't realise that the Labor Party, with its affiliated unions, is probably the most cashed-up political machine in the world. I mean, they have more than $1 billion of net assets between them. The CFMEU's got more than $100 million. The Labor Party in Queensland owns $15 million worth of shares in Suncorp. None of this is ever disclosed. So it's just staggering that these sort of things are not disclosed, whereas, you know, I used to run a kindergarten in Victoria as the president, and I used to have to tell the state government what my net assets were at the kinder, yet the political parties can have $1 billion and it's a secret. It's just a joke. We've got the worst system in the world. So thank goodness Kevin Rudd is using Wollongong to clean it up. And John Faulkner is going to square the ledger with all those New South Wales right enemies from the Graham Richardson School and actually clean up campaign finance, which is a great thing.
Fun to see the chickens running the foxes around. That's kind of good. Okay, look, Stephen, it's been terrific to have you in the studio this morning.